Here are the highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. Visit freetalklive.com for the full episode.
I have noticed something, Heather. Maybe you've picked up on this, too, that whenever Daryl brings in a story from Alabama, we always lead with it.
Mm-hmm. I didn't notice.
I've noticed that. This has been a trend, that if it brings up Alabama, it goes right to the top of the list. And that's fine.
Maybe he does alphabetical stories, Alabama.
By state?
Yeah.
Maybe that's what he's doing. I don't know.
Subconsciously.
I think he just loves Alabama. Mm-hmm. It is where you grew up, is it not?
It is where I grew up. This is absolutely a horrible story and in no way makes Alabama look good.
But yet, you got to give that. I mean, I love to talk about stories out of Oregon. You love to talk about stories out of Massachusetts. Mm-hmm. Daryl loves to talk about stories out of Alabama. So please don't let me.
I love to talk about interesting stories, and this one just happens to be from Alabama.
Oh, don't let me bug you, Daryl. Come on.
The story is actually from the UK Guardian about the incident in Alabama. It says, unlike the vast majority of fatal shootings by police officers, someone is going to prison for the 2015 death of 16-year-old Adante Washington in Alabama. It just is not going to be the police officer who shot him. Lakeith Smith was sentenced last week to 30 years in prison for Adante's murder, even though no one disputes that the bullet that killed him came from the officer's gun.
The weird thing about this one is the only person shot was not shot by one of the five, was shot by a police officer.
But the way they had rationalized it in the class is that everybody that took part in that crime, whatever happens as a result of you doing that, is essentially your own responsibility.
Right.
And that had you not broken those laws, you never would have been,
In a sense, what this comes down to, they're saying that this kid was an accessory to the murder of this other kid who was murdered by police.
In the eyes of the law, that probably is how it was, because I remember that in school.
That just
I think that
is the charge that he was convicted of.
Right.
Not accessory, but manslaughter. But it's under what's called the accomplice law, meaning he took part in the burglary
that ultimately led to his friend's death.
So therefore manslaughter, because, well, your friend wouldn't have died if you weren't involved.
Hmm.
Yeah. And again,
that's all I had to say.
The thing that strikes me the most is this just highlights the whole plea deal system.
What were they burglarizing? Do you know?
It doesn't say. But the fact that he was offered a plea deal of 25 years, and because he actually made the prosecutor work for the conviction, he was punished with an additional 40 years in prison. There are laws on the books in 46 states, and I just did have the list in front of me. I think it was Ohio, Michigan, Hawaii, and one of the ones that starts with an I, that have gotten rid of these so-called felony murder laws or accomplice laws that basically say that if you're committing a felony and one of your conspirators or accomplices winds up getting killed, you can be charged even if you are not the one that wound up killing them.
Right, or they kill someone else, or anything happens. Right, basically that's it, right?
Yeah.
If the alleged criminals shoot somebody else, you could get charged with murder or manslaughter. If one of them gets shot by police or by the homeowner or by the business owner, then you could be charged with that. And you should be charged with a crime that you commit. That's what it comes down to for me. This doesn't sound right. Right. I understand it's a law, but
I can't remember. But does it say if that law includes like people that weren't involved in the crime? Like, let's say you rob a bank and a police aims to shoot and they miss and they hit somebody else and that person dies. Would the same thing apply?
I don't know, and it depends on how it's written in each state, because every state writes their things differently.
Don't steal things from people. I don't know what else to say.
Lakeith Smith is an innocent little angel.
I'm just saying my thoughts on on it are, you know, play stupid games, win stupid prizes. Like, you know what? You shouldn't have been robbing people. You know what? Should the officer have fired at the guy's back? No, probably not. I mean, I think of, you know, with respect to the law, like, think about people that drink and drive. Like, drinking and driving is a crime, but what if you hit and kill somebody? Then there's that additional, like, manslaughter. Like, was your intent to kill them? But you would still get charged. And so when you do reckless and negligent things, like an armed burglary, and one of your friends gets killed, it kind of, you know.
So to draw a parallel on your drunk driving, this, it would be akin to charging the bartender.
Right.
With accessory to murder because somebody that bought alcohol at the bar was in an accident.
I think that's a little different because I think when you have a group of people that intend to burglarize something, they know the risks there. They know that when people...
Right, and when you're a bartender and you serve somebody alcohol, you know that there's a risk that they might get intoxicated.
But my point is what about this idea of adding on charges to other people that weren't directly? And that's where I go back to that system of justice. I mean, you were involved in a bank robbery, therefore you are charged with bank robbery.
I have a story that's kind of like the flip side of what we just discussed, as far as... The first story was a police officer that had killed another person. This is about criminals that killed police officers. And it actually kind of hits close to home because if you haven't already heard, there was a Yarmouth police officer in Massachusetts that was killed while executing a warrant. So he's one of the officers in my hometown. I didn't know him, but a lot of people I did knew him. So it is kind of one of those stories.
So for people that have no clue about Massachusetts geography, where is Yarmouth?
It's on Cape Cod.
Yeah.
Okay. The Cape
and
Islands.
People that also have no clue about Massachusetts geography.
Cape Cod is the little branch that goes out into the ocean.
Like a fish.
Oh, so it's the little thing that goes out past Boston.
There's two islands. Right. There's Martha's Vineyard where Jaws was filmed. Everyone knows Jaws.
P-Town.
The Kennedys lived there.
Okay.
On the Cape.
I got really drunk there one night.
Okay, so anyway. So basically, the person that killed, a little backstory, this guy that killed the police officer had like 111 charges, like, and they weren't just like victimless crime charges. They were like, he was arrested for like choking a pregnant woman. He stabbed somebody that he stalked, and like just a lot of crazy stuff this guy had, but he kept somehow getting put back on the streets.
I think I made it apparent I've been traveling on the coast past couple of days, and I ended up bringing home a very nasty cough.
Oh,
and
no.
I was coughing up like green bloody mucus, and I had listened to myself with a stethoscope because I'm going to nursing school, and I kind of had a sneaking suspicion it was pneumonia. And have you guys ever experienced pneumonia before?
Yes.
Yes.
I have not. I've also never used a stethoscope on myself, but I will give you the same advice that I gave Jamie. You might want to go see a medical professional.
Well, I decided to experiment with a treatment I had heard about for pneumonia that I think a lot of pharmaceutical companies like to keep under wraps.
Meth?
I had watched a lecture. No, not meth. I had watched a lecture.
You didn't deny the cocaine.
Yeah, I was going to say. And everybody knows meth is
just
for a flu, Daryl.
It's all right. But
I always get my old-timey remedies confused.
Starve a cold, meth a fever. That's the old
exactly,
saying.
Exactly. Right, no, so it's weed a fever. Come on.
I might be wrong. Go ahead.
Anywho, I had watched a lecture a couple years ago by this doctor who had talked about taking extraordinary doses of vitamin C in order to subside the effects of pneumonia.
So when an armed criminal gang commits an armed criminal action, a serious crime of aggression, like murder, robbery, something like that, when the gang commits the crime, they go out and they are responsible for the actions. I think that on its face, the idea of that, if one of the members of the gang kills somebody, it's murder. It's felony murder. It's at least manslaughter. It's they share culpability when an armed criminal gang, does that. But on the margins of it, yeah, there is it's troubling on this particular case because a member of the gang isn't the one that did the it didn't do the killing, and actually a member of the so-called criminal gang was killed. Now, that's still kind of covered by the law in most cases, from my understanding of it. But in addition to that, it wasn't murder, like you said. It was justifiable, and you kind of got to be fair about that. It's not a murder. So how is he charged with a murder?
Yeah.
Because it's one of those things to where the prosecutors like to play every side of an issue and charge somebody with whatever they can charge them on and hope that they wind up taking the plea deal, which he did not, and then a jury wound up in 90 minutes convicting him of all charges, and this guy wound up being punished for not taking a plea deal.
What's our goal here? You know, is it eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth? You did this, 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 and this, so we're going to hit you with the maximum. Then just give everybody the death penalty and be done with it.
Yeah, he's 16 and he doesn't have any, like, violent, violent things, and this is like, you know, well, the group first, of young kids.
Was
just...
it the first thing? I don't know. I don't know what his background was.
I'm fairly certain that if he had a very long rap sheet, that would be mentioned in every article that was written about him.
Probably.
Even all of the horrible hit pieces written from Fox News that did not mention any kind of previous record.
Yeah, and I'm not defending him, but right. I do think, you know, as a society, we ought to look at this stuff and say, is our goal just, like I said, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, or is it to try to turn something horrible into something positive maybe later on?
Right. You know, and I guess really the question that needs to be answered, and I can't answer this for anybody else, is the point of the justice system to rehabilitate people, or is it to punish them?
Yeah, well, that's pretty much what I was saying. Yeah,
like little of both? I mean...
Yeah.
It's so frustrating when there's, like, the story that I'll get back into where it's like this guy that's just so violent gets let out time and time and time again and then kills a police officer. And then
this kid,
like 16 years old, commits a robbery. Like, you know, where's the opportunity to kind of like learn from your mistake?
In Massachusetts, all judges are appointed, and we are still reeling from having both liberal Democratic governors as well as liberal Republican governors that have appointed people to the bench who are not putting people to the time that they should based upon the crimes that they
And you said something
committed.
About they're appointed but they run for re-election. Is that kind of like the thing they do in Pennsylvania to where every so many years they go up for a vote of do you want to keep so-and-so as a judge?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Gotcha.
That way it's not a totally political situation, but there's a high correlation between making contributions to the governor of the time and being appointed a judge.
Right.
That not all drug dealers own pit bulls, or not all pit bulls are owned by drug dealers, but all drug dealers own pit bulls.
I wanted to shift topics a little bit. I know that Chris a couple of weeks ago had brought up the Rajneeshis in Oregon. And now that I've finished watching that amazing documentary on Netflix, I wanted to pick his brain about it a little bit.
Wait, was that the cult thing?
Yes.
Oh, I remember that.
Did you watch it?
Yeah.
No, I didn't watch it. It's on Netflix?
Watch it.
It is.
It's good.
And what's the name of that? Wild Wild Country?
Wild Wild Country.
Yep.
Yeah, it's so really go good. Ahead with your thoughts.
It's very well done, and I think it serves as a good example of a community getting together, wanting to be independent, wanting to be self-governing, and then having the full might of the state of Oregon and the U.S. come upon them and basically disband them all. But from within, they had their own conflicts that absolutely contributed to that, and they eventually turned violent. And so I wanted, Chris had mentioned, I think that you even got to go onto the ranch. And
yeah.
I'd like to hear your experience on that and then your opinion on it having been so close to it.
Sure. So we started talking about this a few weeks back, but when I was 18 years old, the Rajneeshis had just kind of settled the ranch, and this all occurred about 95 miles from where I lived in Eastern Oregon, and that's like one or two towns over. So we used to always travel through there, and my English teacher at the time, she had just resigned, and it was her summer, and I was going into the military, so we decided to go check out the ranch. Just a couple other thoughts on that. The other thing that they talked a lot about was how it was a completely drug-free area, and, you know, we have no drugs here, and, you know, this was the early 80s, and face it.
Drugs are bad. Okay.
Wait, was that like a decoy, or was it really drug-free?
Well, it really was. And except to our tour guide, I'm like, okay, you keep talking about how you have no drug problem here. There's no drugs here. But I see like 10 beer trucks lined up right over there. And there was, you know, Miller and Budweiser and all this stuff. And I was like, what's the deal with that? And they're like, she said, we work 13 and a half days on, and every 2 weeks we get that half day off. You work like that out in the fields. At the end of the day, wouldn't you want a beer? I'm like, okay, that's that's a good argument. But they saw that things in moderation were not bad. Overall, my ideas on the documentary, and I've been talking a lot with friends of mine back home about this, where there were no good actors in any of this. The Rajneeshis came there for arguably good reasons, but then they behaved horribly. There were a lot of things, a lot of unsolved arsons and a lot of unsolved acts of violence and acts of just, you know, vandalism and things like that that occurred in the area that were likely, you know, they very well could have been Rajneesh coordinated.
I just like to comment on the locals' part and sort of accepting them. One of the biggest things that they seemed to have an issue with was like the free thought of the community and expressing themselves mm-hmm. how they wanted to, with especially with regards to the free sex. It was this seemingly wild community in this quaint conservative Oregon town. And I think it connects pretty well with the Discord chat going on about sex before marriage right now and just sort of the taboos that are on that. And that's great that you met the tour guide and that was the first question that she asked you.
First question I asked because I was 18 years old and male.
First question that you asked her. But I'm curious, like, if these kind of social mores against sex might be going to the wayside as we get more progressive in society, but...
I don't think waiting until marriage is a bad thing. And I didn't do that because I'm a single mom to an 8-year-old. But I do see the importance of, you know, when it comes to families and raising kids, they're a huge responsibility. And sex is intended for procreation. I mean, that's really like what it ultimately comes down to. And no form of birth control is 100% effective. And I think it is good to promote traditional values of, you know, having a stable home as far as like what's in the best interest of children.
So let's talk about opioids.
Yeah.
Americans love them, right? Yay.
But I'm making sure that I get my daily dose.
I know. I take them every day. It's the only way I can get
recommended
out of bed.
Daily allowance is zero, correct?
I believe so.
Yes.
And I do that every day.
I've done that, I believe, every day for the last 40 years and a couple of months.
Never took an opiate.
Not to my knowledge. I've taken some barbiturates.
Huh.
Okay. I don't think I've ever taken one either.
Oh, wait.
I've had them prescribed.
Morphine is an opiate, right?
Yes, it is.
All right. Yeah, I had some of that when I fractured my butt.
I got one of those pain things after you get your wisdom
hairline
teeth.
Fracture on my tailbone.
That's the only thing.
Hold on, Heather. What? You had a hairline fracture of your tailbone, your coccyx, or you just say your butt?
It was the tailbone.
Okay.
Hairline fracture the whole way across from hip to hip. I was living in Pennsylvania at the time and slipped on a patch of ice, and I was carrying my son, and I didn't want to drop him. So instead of falling in such a way to where he would get hurt, I wound up, you know, split second decision, falling right on my butt, and I wound up fracturing my butt.
And you got opiates for that.
Got a morphine shot.
I'm sorry, Heather. Before he brought up breaking his ass.
Did you get the shot your ass?
Yes.
What were you going to say?
Where they give a morphine shot.
Really?
On the opioid thing that you're talking about, my mother-in-law takes one opioid prescription.
Mm-hmm.
And in the last year, all it's done is created another job for a different kind of a doctor. Because her doctor, her MD, writes her the prescription. Then to get the prescription filled, she has to go to another doctor called a pain management specialist, and then he has to actually write her a prescription that she can actually get filled.
Right.
It's just putting another doctor in the chain, so they got somebody else to make money. Once a month, she has to go sit there for like 3 hours waiting for an appointment 3 hours past their appointment time to get in there because this guy's so overbooked and he's making so much money, it's ridiculous.
Right. So what this is this is the government, the results of the governmental response to a crisis, you know, and this is what they do. They'll lay down all sorts of new regulations. They'll change all the rules for how things are supposed to work and how they need to happen. They'll put in additional requirements before you can get your meds. And these are the types of things that drive up our costs of health care. You know, it's just what it is. I don't know how many people are being prevented from becoming addicted through this. To me, it just always seemed like doctors needed to be better aware of the risks of addiction when they go to prescribe.
Since you did mention Purdue, I recalled seeing this a couple of months ago, back in February. Purdue had announced that they were going to stop marketing OxyContin to doctors.
Yeah. Well, if you've already done it for, you know, 20 years now, something like that,
right.
You probably
right.
Don't
doctors
need to.
Are well aware that OxyContin is a thing, but it's one of those things to where, you know, as long as you stay right in front of it, hey, here's your free carton of pens. Here's your notepads where you never have to buy notepads again.
Yeah.
And it says Purdue Pharmaceutical OxyContin at the top.
Well, another thing that we might look at that may be playing into this is the fact that lots of states have reported, and this is not just me reporting, that states that have done medical marijuana tend to trend lower in prescriptions of opiates.
Yes.
So more people will turn to CBD and smoking marijuana and stuff like that, which is it's a great thing. It's, you know, as far as I know, still nobody has died from marijuana overdose.
Correct. There was probably that one person that had a large crate of cannabis fall on them, possibly, maybe.
Could have happened.
Like, that's really the only way that you die from cannabis.
Down here in Florida, during the height of the pill mill epidemic, I knew a guy. He could go into one of the pain management clinics with $500, go in, see the doctor. And within 45 minutes, you go and see the doctor, and you come out with 180 OxyContins, and they would actually like dispense the pills right there before they put the ban where you can't dispense the pills where you prescribe them also.
Right.
So that was one of the, so a lot of the pills are coming out of Florida. And, you know, $500 cash, and you were gravy. All you had to do was walk in there. Oh, my leg's hurting, my back's hurting, or whatever, and you could just walk out. And I could see how that was a problem, but now they've done so hard with the regulation. I have a buddy, he got burnt, you know, pretty bad throughout his whole body. Now he has to personally get the prescription from the doctor, and then he has to see a regular physician and go to the pain management, and then they actually P-test him to make sure he's taking the medication and not selling them. And he has to have the physical prescription and now take the physical prescription up to the pharmacist. They can't dispense them there anymore. And, I mean, it's just it makes it much harder on him because it's hard for him to move and get around. And then now the regulation is really over-regulated on how you can get them since they scheduled to, I think, a 2 now.
The federal government and about half the states have enacted restrictions such as limiting dose or duration of opioids that can be prescribed. Insurers and drugstores began imposing similar limits on opioid use for acute pain as opposed to cancer and chronic pain patients. The Drug Enforcement Administration, DEA, increased prosecution of heavy prescribers, and numerous medical groups have issued guidelines urging prescribers to offer other pain management options when possible, and to limit doses and duration of opioid prescriptions. Despite those measures, deaths from drug overdoses have continued to increase in the U.S., and an emergency room saw a big jump in overdoses from opioids last year, according to government data. Doctors have been heeding the message from medical groups, and some worry they'll be arrested or lose their license if they provide too many opioids, says Bob Twillman, executive director of the Academy of Integrative Pain Management, which represents doctors and others who treat pain patients.
And I'm certain that too many opioids is just a decision that somebody makes of, we just think that you've prescribed too many.
Right. More to the point, somebody at the, you know, DEA or FDA comes up with a random number. It's undoubtedly arbitrary. They'll say it's based on some study, and it probably is, but in the end, medicine is like the most personal thing.
When you have drugs that are regulated and the market, right? Like, because there's a free market, there's a black market. But like, if you go into a CVS, chances are everything in the bottle is what it is. Whereas Correct. If you buy it on the streets,
you have no idea.
You have no idea. So to some degree, everything in the pharmacy is regulated. Everything yes. on the black market is not. So to some degree, is regulation not providing at least a safer oversight, like where
here's what I would
let's look at vitamins and supplements.
Well, hold on to your point. What I would love to see would be people who you know say pharmacies still say we want to see a prescription, we want to see a doctor say that you need this particular drug. So you know it's sort of a baby steps towards put in your body whatever you want. But if they were allowed to do that without interference from the government, don't you think prices would go down, service could go up?
You just heard highlights from the latest episode of Free Talk Live. You can download full episodes, subscribe to our podcast, listen live, and more, all for free at freetalklive.com.